weather rise when the wind blows across the water. Game harvest is surely come.
Thanks for joining us for the Organic Farm Stand, which comes to you the first and third Thursday of each month. Guess what? We crossed the August barrier. We are past midsummer, and we've had some rather amazing meteorological encounters in the past week, both extremely hot, perfect summery weather, and then this out-of-the-blue tropical storm, which has laid low Connecticut. Last I heard, there were 700,000 people in Connecticut without power, and many of them still are without power. My power went out. By the way, my name is Richard Hill. My power went out on whatever the first day of the storm was. I guess it was 2 days ago, and but it came back in a couple hours. That happened at night, so we were candlelight only. But there are many stories out there, many stories in the naked planet upon which we live when we're exposed to the elements. So I know, I feel your pain, believe me. A tree fell on my house, so God knows what's going on. I must say we have an unusual situation here because Guy Beardsley and Janelle Beardsley are not available. Their phones are probably out of commission, could not connect with them. Chris Ferriero is not here, but we do have, being in the first Thursday of the month, we do have our usual and very special guest, Vincent Kay, standing by to join in, and he's going to give us a bee update, a honeybee update, and he has much to talk about because I think he's passed, well, we're going to find out, but I think heavy-duty honey harvesting period is either in mid-process or has probably ended by now. But let's find out. Vincent, thank you so much for joining us. He is the owner of Swords into Plowshares Honey. He joins us the first Thursday of each month. Vincent, thanks so much for being first up here on the Organic Farm Stand today.
My pleasure, Richard. My pleasure. But yes, indeed, the storms really do impact our daily lives. My generator is currently running, and I live right here in New Haven, and so we've been without power for a number of days now, and it does affect, a storm like that affects a lot of things out in the wild. Fortunately, we didn't have, the heavy rain that came off of the ocean that certain people did, because that rain actually is filled with salt from the ocean and will burn the plants and flowers just like a frost will. Hmm. So it actually will end the season very quickly.
Wow.
However, the wind was equally as destructive. And yes, New Haven is a train wreck right now. It's just, you're lucky to know what street is open and what street is closed. And we just finished this morning making the rounds of all the bee yards, and we have almost 20 from Westbrook to Oxford. And we were spared for the most part, although yesterday we spent a great bit of time in the afternoon clearing major trees that fell down and crushed a number of hives up on Sleeping Giant Mountain, where we have an apiary there. And, of course, it's one thing, the electric fence was crushed. Everything, has to be rebuilt. So we had to get the trees off of it. And of course, you're in a bee suit working a chainsaw. And the bees that are not happy because of, having their hive just totally annihilated. But in any event, we tried to do our best. And they worked with us for the most part. And we were able to get the fences working. And the fences, of course, are to keep the black bears out, which there are a number of, and they're solar electric fencing. They work well, but they have to be maintained, and the wires can't be touching the ground or have branches on them, which this was just totally flattened. But in any event, we had to string new wire and new posts and stuff like that. But it's a nonstop maintenance, and so we finally finished in Oxford this morning, and we were spared because there was just, you know, a little bit of debris here and there on the fence lines, and the hives were in good shape. So we are about halfway through our honey harvest for 2020. The bees, however, have come to a screeching halt. There's not a lot blooming out there right now. In Connecticut, it's called the dearth, and it it's a period of time when the bee populations are very populous. I mean, there's just thousands and thousands of honeybees that have been working to gather the spring and early summer bloom, the nectar from the bloom, from different flowers and trees and shrubs in Connecticut. But now things with the heat have come to a screeching halt. And so all these bees don't have a whole lot to do. And, of course, they gather water instead of nectar to cool the hives down. But they also can suffer. And actually, if you end up with a rainy period of, say, like a week or 4 or 5 days even, that hive can use up all its stored honey and starve to death right in the middle of the summer. So we monitor these things very carefully. We've kind of slowed down the pace at which we're taking honey from the bees. In other words, the different apiaries that we're harvesting from, we've got a number of very large apiaries in Woodbridge and Bethany, and we're slowing that process down because we're worried that the bees will probably need some of that honey that, well, we wanted to harvest, and we will, but it's going to be postponed just to make sure they have enough to eat for themselves. So it's one of the things, you know, with animal husbandry, the animals or the insects or whatever it may be, come first, and our profits, unfortunately, in some days, come second or last. Mm. But we want to make sure that the bees' health is maintained. And so we've been extracting the honey that we have, the boxes of honey that we have pulled from the specific apiaries thus far. And the one problem we've had is that we've had to move the honey from the second floor to the first floor for fear the building is going to collapse.
Wait, which building is that?
This is the honey house. This is where we extract the honey, but we are just afraid from the weight. We've got so much honey this year.
Oh, I see.
That we moved probably about 10,000 pounds to the first floor. And so now we're still extracting honey. We've got honey stored in large stainless steel 1,000-pound tanks, bottling tanks, as well as single jacketed tanks. So it's a nice problem to have. So in some ways, the price of honey is not going to go down, but it's a nice problem to have as far as hitting a good year for a change, because so much of this is weather dependent.
So you say this is a good year.
It is.
That is to say, in spite of these challenges. From the storm and other perhaps other issues you can mention, you're getting. Why is there such large production?
Well, I mean, when the bees can gather every day, day after day, every single bloom or source of blooms, black locust blooms in the spring. So, you know, we sort of had the beginning of a good stretch of weather, sunny, flyable weather every day, where the bees don't fly in the rains, and they don't fly, you know, when it's cold out. They're like birds in a way. They sit on the eggs to keep them warm, and anything that changes the atmosphere, whether it be moisture or temperature, tends to keep them inside the hive and cluster on the eggs to keep them alive and keep them warm. So in those periods, you know, you could have a series of blooms that could produce quite a bit of honey in Connecticut, like black locust or tulip poplar, go by, and not a drop of honey is going to come from those flowers because the bees just didn't have a chance to gather it because the weather didn't cooperate.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we've had a really good stretch of weather for tulip poplar, I would say from the middle of, certainly from the about the third week of May, going into the fourth week. And then we had, you know, evening rains, which sustained the moisture level in the soil. So we've had good days, rain at night, and June and July. You know, we did well with the linden bloom here in New Haven and other areas. the linden honey can be really profuse, and it just doesn't let up. And so we've got a bunch of that that we of course mix everything together. We don't keep separate honey crops. But, you know, and the clover has been steady, which needs water, but it needs heat. And, you know, now we're into some of the late blooming things like Joe Pye weed and ironweed. We've gone through the milkweed, of course, everyone's favorite. I love it, but a lot of people don't.
Why course, is that? Why do you
well,
love it?
Well, it's just an invasive plant that, that grows everywhere. And the same thing with the upcoming bloom, which I just love. The Japanese knotweed, because it produces a honey that's the color of red wine. It's absolutely gorgeous, and it's delicious. And so that'll be coming up, and that, you know, usually gets mixed with goldenrod. And the sumac, we did very well with the sumac this year. In fact, some of it was still blooming in some of the bee yards this morning when we were there in Woodbridge. But, yeah, I mean, it's mostly weather and good. A good dry spell, it may drive a crop farmer crazy, but with irrigation. But for beekeepers, it's probably the best formula for a good honey crop or a good honey year. However, and this is something that I really want to touch on, because it's such an interesting concept. It's a phenomenon called supersedure. And it happens in every beehive. It happens every year. Usually during the dearth, or when the bees come to a halt in their work. In other words, they're not bringing in nectar. Things have kind of, they shrug their shoulders maybe and look at each other and say, what's next? and they look at the queen and they say, and this is how I imagine it. They kind of, you know, maybe it's a form of democracy. I don't know, but I could see, you know, the bees on comb two voting to either keep or not keep the queen, and then on comb eight they're saying no, you know, we want to keep her or not keep her, and you know, basically the hive is rolling the dice. They know that winter is coming, the dearth is set in, and they know that the flowers are limited, and so is the weather once the fall flowers start. And so they roll the dice and they say, do we want this queen or not? Will she take us through this winter into the next year? And so what they do is kill her if they don't want her. And they take a fertilized egg. And this is risky. It always astounds me how risky it is for a hive to do this at this time of year. They take a fertilized egg and they engorge it with royal jelly and make a queen cell out of it and raise a new queen. Well, that's fine. In 24 or 21 days, it hatches out and she's a virgin queen. Now she's got to fly out of the hive on her one mating flight, mate with as many drones as she can until she has enough sperm to bring back to the hive and start the whole process over. When I say risky, so many things can go wrong. I mean, a dragonfly can pluck her out of the air and eat her. A bird can do this. She may not be able to find her way back. Some of the beehives where the canopy is straight up, it's vertical. The bees don't fly out of the hive. They fly maybe 6 inches out, and then they just rocket straight up through the canopy of the trees. And then however they find their way back is just amazes me that they can do this. Now, you know, take a storm like this that's knocked down a few trees. Well, the whole picture for them has changed. So does that queen, that virgin queen, now on her one mating flight, is she able to get back? So these are all questions that I can't really answer other than these are considerations that the hive has undertaken. So people say, well, do you know your bees? Do you have names for them? No, but I know that they do think. There is some kind of cognition that goes on. And it happens in every single hive. And some of them keep the queens. And you know, some of the queens will live 2 or 3, 4 or 5 years even. But some of them have a very short lifespan, depending upon whether the queen's pheromones are strong enough to control the workforce of the hive, whether her egg-laying capacity, her ovaries have enough eggs and sperm to to foster a strong workforce for the upcoming year. And these are all things that they can figure out based on what's happened in this season. But now the decision has to be made.
So I want to follow up on that. What are the criteria on which the, I guess, is it mostly the worker bees who make the decision as well as
yes.
thumbs up and
yes.
thumbs down? So,
yes.
Like, what are those criteria? How do they decide this queen may live?
Well, I just started to mention, you know, they can sense whether her pheromones are dwaning or weakening. Pheromones being the actual smell that controls, you know, the workforce and the behavior of the hive. So the pheromonal levels have to be at such a level that, well, first of all, her egg-laying capacity has to be at a certain level. And it's a risky thing for a queen to you know, she's been kind of a workhorse as far as, you know, egg-laying. And she's created a population of 80,000 or 100,000 bees, mostly workers, of course. And then her egg laying is directly in relationship to the amount of nectar coming in. So if you get a stretch of bad weather, the bees don't blame the bad weather. They blame the queen for the bad weather.
Mm-hmm.
So the weather is a big factor. The heat and the drought and how long that goes on is a big factor. How long and how much nectar is going to be coming in for the fall flowers, the asters, the goldenrods, the Japanese knotweeds, all of these things are going to be the food source for their survival during the winter. However, the decision for supersedure is made now. It's made at the beginning of the dearth, during the dearth, So when she needs to be back and she needs to be laying a young series of eggs, you know, thousands of eggs of healthy bees going into the winter. Bees in general, honeybees, a worker bee, will maybe live 30 days. So there's a constant mortality and there's a constant replacement of this workforce and of these bees. She has to keep up with that. However, during the dearth, because there's no nectar coming in, her egg laying tends to decline. This is another thing they judge their queen by. You know, can she maintain a population to get ready for the fall flowers, or is she going to just shut down and be unable to sustain it with a new crop of honeybees?
It's amazing. So these bees, as you just repeated, because I recall on an earlier show you mentioned the lifespan of a bee, very short.
Mm-hmm.
These bees who are staring death in the face, I guess, I have to make a decision, not about their own longevity, so to speak, but about...
Well, it does. I mean, in some ways it does, because they're thinking of the hive survival, and if they're making a judgment as to whether this queen is going to sustain them through the winter or going into the winter, and so if...
But they're not going to get through the winter.
No, they're not. And the young force of bees that is going to be, they're going to live more than 30 days. The honeybees that hatch out in September and maybe even October, and if it's a warm fall, it can go on into November, those bees will live 6 months.
Oh, okay.
Because those are the bees that are going to insulate the inside of the hive and create the heat needed for survival during the winter months. So their role is not really involved in flight, per se, or gathering of nectar. And there's been studies where, you know, they say that, you know, the amount of flight a honeybee participates in is what actually determines its lifespan. So the harder they work, the less time they have on the earth.
I see. Okay.
Don't work too hard.
So, wow. What an amazing story you've just told. Do you have more information you want to purvey? Because I was thinking maybe we could invite listeners who are as curious as I am to call up and ask a question or two.
We could do that. I just want to also just mention real quick to other beekeepers that now is the time if you think that you don't have a fertilized queen in the hive to lay eggs now so that the bees can make a decision about supersedure, that there are companies that can sell you queen bees, and because your hive is going to die anyhow without a queen bee, so you have to do something. You can do nothing and just kind of let it perish, I suppose, but that's not what people involved in animal husbandry are supposed to do, and it's not what we like to do. So we do purchase sometimes. As we're harvesting honey, we can tell right away that something, this hive is probably swarmed during the early spring, and the virgin queen never made it back, or for one reason or another, the population of bees has decreased to a very lethal level where it's just not going to make it very much longer. So what we usually do is take a number of frames of brood from another hive, provided there is no disease in the apiary, and move them into the hive that's in question. And then we've purchased queen bees from companies that raise them. That's their sole business, of raising queen bees. And we put the queens in, and in a couple of days they're accepted and begin the process all over, just as if supersedure had happened. So you're artificially creating a situation where, you know, the bees are being given a fresh crop of bees, a fresh queen, and now they can move forward. And hopefully, if you monitor food and pests and different mites and things like this, that you can actually get them through the winter and have a nice hive for the spring.
Wow. Well, let me give out the phone number. You never know if anybody's going to call in or not, but you're still certainly welcome to participate. Pecan Community, the number is 203-336-9756. Our community extends all around the state of Connecticut and over to Long Island. So there are many, many probably interested people who, if they're listening, would be welcome to join the conversation. Give the number again. It's 203-336-9756. My name is Richard Hill. This is WPKN's Organic Farm Stand, which comes to you the first and third Thursday of each month. And this is a very unusual show because I'm sitting here all by my lonesome. Don't have Guy Beardsley on the phone, don't have Janelle, and Chris Ferriero is not here. So, on the other hand, Steve DiCostanzo is welcome to pop in anytime and be a tourist on the organic farm stuff. He's actually stepped into the breach many times when traffic or weather has prevented either Chris or I from getting here on time to start the show. So he's familiar with the format. So, Steve, if you want to come down, please do. We welcome phone calls for Vincent Kay. Unfortunately, we won't be able to entertain questions. Although, Vincent, you probably know about organic agriculture and different aspects of agriculture to be able to answer a question or two there. But the main focus will be on honeybees and this fascinating story that Vincent's been telling us today. 203-336-9756. Vincent, anything you want to pick up from here, or should I try to dream up a question?
No, I know that the other thing that we do as we're harvesting honey, and I'm glad we do it, it's not something that we all the time, but again, the health of the bees and the survivability of the hive is crucial. Dead bees don't make honey. I guarantee you that. And so what we do, we run a single box brood chamber. It's called a deep super. And then we have a queen excluder over that, which keeps the queen from through into the honey boxes and laying larvae in the honeycombs that we're going to harvest and extract the honey from. You don't want to be spinning larvae out into the tank filled with honey that, you know, you're going to have to filter all that out. So we don't do that. But we try to keep the queen in the lower box by using a queen excluder. Basically, the grid or the spaces in the metal wire allow the worker bees to pass up into the honey boxes and deposit the honey. But the queen, whose abdomen is a little bit larger because she lays all these eggs, she can't wiggle through. And so we monitor that. But sometimes as we're harvesting the honey, we'll take off two or three boxes of honey that weighs 60 or 70 pounds a piece. And then we specifically lift the brood chamber or the nest where the queen is. And I would say 8 or 9 times out of 10, there's ample food to get them through the dearth into the fall flowers. However, every once in a while, there's just so many bees that I say, you know, to my first mate, John Gradzik, I call him my first mate because we're like a ship. You know, we have the dogs, we've got the beekeepers, we've got God knows what, usually bees on the truck, and we kind of tootle along. But we make sure that we have sugar syrup on the truck in case that nest, that hive down below the queen excluder that we've just robbed of all this honey, needs feeding. And I can't tell you how successful we've been in being able to offset their diet or their health by having them have enough to eat for even a week or 10 days to get them to those fall flowers. And so, you know, it is what it is, but I always recommend to beekeepers, yes, harvest the honey, but once you have, check the weight of the hive, and you can do it by hefting it from the back a little bit. Either John or I kind of help lift it a little bit. You can tell how much honey is actually in the hive, more or less, whether you have 10, 15, 20 pounds of honey. And then you know, kind of eyeball the amount of bees in the hive, and you say, yeah, that's enough for them to make it and be a healthy, you know, unit.
Wow. Great story there. So let's, we did have a call come in, and then I put it on hold, and the person left in a huff.
Okay. Oh, dear.
So I encourage that person to call back.
Don't be an angry bee. Yeah.
call back 203-336-9756. We're kind of just treading water here a little bit, waiting for some community participation. My guest
we
is,
often don't. I think. I'm sorry, Richard. Go ahead.
No, I'm just going to reintroduce you. Guest is Vincent Kay, who joins us the first Thursday of each month. He is the owner of Swords into Plowshares Honey. And we've talked a little bit about the challenges that COVID-19 have presented. Our general manager, Steve DiCostanzo, has popped in. That'll be very nice. He's always a fun conversational partner, so we'll wait for him to hook up here, and he'll join us. But here's a call, so I'm going to bring you in, caller. Hang in there. Caller, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Thanks for joining.
There was one thing with the storm that I've noticed. Now, I think it's you that comes down the dock to watch the ospreys. I do the same thing. But I've been noticing a lot of honeybees down here. Now, with the storm, with a lot of trees getting knocked down, are they losing their hives from the trees that are getting knocked down?
Well, if there are honeybees in the natural landscape, hollow trees, of course, are not the most stable trees in a windstorm. So if you're going to lose trees, those are the ones that are going to snap off. And yes, if there's honeybee nests in those, they'll be very disoriented.
Down there, you know, and it's, you know, people think they're yellow jackets and they're swatting at them and everything. But I've noticed they come into my truck, you know, but I just noticed that. And I was just wondering, you know, can these bees like go to your hives, or, you know, where do they go after they lose their nests?
If they lose their nest, they're in trouble. But if there's a queen and the cluster of bees is still alive, they can usually find a new home and try to set up shop quickly. In nature, though, I mean, probably 7 out of 10 swarms doesn't make the first winter. So nature produces more on purpose to kind of sustain the population or species. But it is one of the things. And this time of year, again, honeybees can get into trouble with people and livestock because they're looking for water. We always say, you know, locate your honeybees or your apiary close to a good, clean source of water because they're going to need that. And if they don't, they're going to go to people's swimming pools and annoy them, and people will spray them with pesticides. They'll go to people's bird baths and other, you know, if you have livestock, water buckets and stuff for horses, cattle, whatever. So, yes, they can become a nuisance if you don't provide for them what they need. They also are going to look for food. I mean, again, the heat that we've endured day after day has both been good for the bees to gather honey, but now it's over because things have dried up and or are in the process of drying up. And it's just proportionally not the same number of flowers in proportion to the number of bees that need to feed themselves as well as sustain a honey crop for the winter.
Okay, I want to say one thing. I miss Guy. I listen to your show diligently, every first and third Thursday, and I tell a lot of people about, you know, your show, because I work in the produce department, and we've been pretty much going a lot of organic lately, especially with kale, and, you know, and...
Where do you work, and where are you calling from?
Now, I'm in Stratford, you know, but I don't know if I don't want to advertise where I work, but it's a grocery store in Stratford. It's called SR, let's just put it that way, you know?
Okay.
Not S&S. But you'll always find me in the produce department, but we have gone a lot of organic lately, and... I'm proud of that.
Well, I appreciate your call, and definitely I will tell Guy and Janelle that they missed a connection with a very big fan, and we appreciate your spreading the word about the show and letting people know about it, because, we've been around for 10
years. Yeah, but I missed Guy about his black garlic. I've been telling a lot of people about that, and with the farmers markets not being open, I know it's tough, and I'm sure he's going through a lot of stuff today at the farm.
Yeah,
with the storm.
No power, I believe. Well, thanks for calling,
But where can I get your honey? Can I get it at Guy's place?
No, but there's a number of stores in the area, and I will say there's a store in Stratford. That sells it. I don't know if I can say the name of it either. I mean, I don't have a problem with it. It's Nature's Way Health Food Store on Barnum Avenue Extension. Yeah, they sell it.
I know exactly where the place is.
Yeah, I will
stop there because I heard you talking about the honey. And then
what's that?
I heard you talking about the honey that, you know, the black honey is like wine or something.
Yeah.
One of the longest has the longest, you know, shelf life. You know.
Well, I mean, different honeys. You're right. I mean, I think you're talking about liquid shelf life versus honey that granulates or turns to a solid. And actually, it's one of the reasons we don't harvest some of the early spring flowers, because the those tend to granulate a little faster, and there's technical reasons for that. But I mean,
the health food store, they have your honey there.
Yes,
a lot of the health food stores do. Hey, thanks for calling. What's your first name again?
Charlie.
Charlie, thanks for
thank you, Charlie.
I'm in the produce department every morning from 6 to 9 or 6 to 10.
All right, hang in there, man. Thanks so much. Bye bye.
And tell them I'm looking for the ospreys, but they're not out today.
Yeah, they've been a little bit scarce. All right. Good luck, Charlie. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, all right. That was nice to hear from Charlie in Stratford. And we have a line open. So if you'd like to join in, the number is 203-336-9756. My name is Richard Hill. I'm here with Steve DeCostanzo, who has kindly popped in just to...
Hey, Richard.
Keep you company.
How are you doing?
I'm hanging in there, man.
Yeah. Well, happy to be sitting in for just a little bit. And, of course, also missing Guy Beards. I hope they're doing well. That storm was something else. You know, I live down in Black Rock in the in Bridgeport.
Oh, yeah. And I got slammed, huh?
Well, compared to what I saw, it was nothing really.
Really?
I mean, I thought it was something. We mostly had small branches and, you know, a lot of leaves down and not big overturned trees. You know, there was just, I think, one tree that came down into a house. But I've been in. I was riding my bike yesterday and this morning in the Fairfield, town of Fairfield. It was just incredible how many trees are still down. Westport is one of the hardest hit towns in all of Connecticut. And that's pretty much still without power. I talked with a lot of our programmers yesterday. I talked with Chris France, who's in the Fairfield, Westport area, and they, you know, without Wi-Fi, without power, a big tree leaning up against power lines. So it's a real mess. We've been having him sign some books. You know, he published his memoirs called "Remain in Love." And we used that as a premium for the fund drive 2 weeks ago, and he was very gracious in signing a whole bunch of books. But I actually have another 10 books we need to get him to sign. But looking at you're up in
I'm in Brantford.
In Brantford, yeah. What's the story up there?
It was bad up there. And
didn't I see you post a photograph on social media of your house? Or
I think the tulip poplar, is that correct, Vincent? Those are quite large trees, right?
It would be a very tall, straight tree, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. It's a gumwood. Produces a great honey, but a lot of those have gone over. And, you know, we were commenting about that yesterday when we were in Westbrook checking hives, that a lot of the trees out there had gone, that had toppled over. They didn't have a deep root base, and I think maybe it's because of the sandier soil along the shoreline. However, I mean, you go inland 10 miles and they're still snapping off, so I don't really know, but maybe the trees just can't sustain that kind of weight with that kind of wind, you know, the physics of it all.
Yeah.
Vincent, where are you based again?
We're based in New Haven, but we have hives from Westbrook to Oxford, honeybee hives.
Okay,
and so we were fortunate. We lost very few hives, but the ones we lost were devastated up on Sleeping Giant Mountain. Yeah. But
I saw a lot of photographs of the New Haven grain. Some big tree limbs down there.
Yeah. Well, my generator is still running right now. I can hear it out in the driveway, but my neighbors are probably really angry. But at the same time,
I'm sure you're.
That's what it's for.
Yeah, I'm sure you're not alone. You know, with the generators. I've heard a lot of generators on my ride this morning through Fairfield. Yeah. Yeah, one of the interesting. I just pulled up an article, and this is from a source. It looks like someone from Eversource.
Don't mean to interrupt, but we do
Do we have a call? Good.
Yeah,
excellent.
Let's just check. See this. Hello, caller. Are you joining us to talk on the Organic Farm Stand?
Yes, I am. And as a matter of fact, I have a question. I have a picture taken on a couple of weeks ago. It's a bee of some sort. It's on a flower extracting honey. It's a black-eyed Susan. And the bee, I took pictures of it and could send them to you. The head and upper abdomen is green. The lower, you know, the back portion of the bee with the stinger in it is black and white stripes. And yellow all over the rear legs. I assume that's pollen it's collecting, and I'm just curious if this was, at least for me, a new type of honeybee or what it is.
Well, I don't think it's a honeybee, but there are other bees. There's bumblebees, there's mason bees, there's orchard bees, but there's also on a black-eyed Susan. There's not a lot of nectar. You're right in the sense that it was gathering pollen, but that may have been incidental. It may have been foraging on other insects, and you have to differentiate. There's bees, wasps, and hornets, all of which have stingers, but it may not have been a bee at all. It may have been a hornet of some sort or a wasp. And
it was, as best as I could ascertain, and you know, being familiar with wasps and hornets at least to some extent, this is more of, it's a bee shape. It's not a, you know, it's, it looks like the shape of a bee, not a hornet. And and I did think it was foraging, not hunting. Meaning gathering.
Well, you know, I'm not familiar with it. I'm sorry, I don't know. With a green head, huh?
I could send in if it's of interest to you. You may know, not a big deal.
Yeah, well, that would be between you and Vincent, actually, because we wouldn't have a way to receive that here. But
yeah, I could go from cell phone to cell phone or whatever you want. But it is a picture on my phone that I could send if you have interest in it. I mean.
Yeah.
So that was the reason for the call, was just to see if it was a, you know, some sort of new strain of honeybee, or just another strain of bee. It did remind me of a honeybee in shape, but certainly not in color.
What part of the state did you see that in?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm on Long Island, exactly smack dab in the middle of Long Island.
Aha! We got a little perspective there from the island. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thanks for calling. Okay. And
yep, you bet. Love the show. Thanks for you know, addressing everything. I listen all the time. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yep.
Okay.
And,
interesting.
Yeah.
A green head and what you know jumped into my layman's mind was a green hornet, but that probably doesn't really exist.
there's some wasps and hornets. Sometimes I look at and I just like. Oh, that's got to hurt when you get that sting. They just look so darn mean.
Yeah.
And, but they're awesome, and they're needed in a garden because, again, I'm not going to dispute what the gentleman just said. He thought it was foraging or getting honey or nectar. But so many of the wasps and hornets will eat aphids and other things that probably a gardener would definitely want to get rid of. So they do have a place and a role and a good one.
Hmm. Well, I was just about to mention one of the energy companies, Eversource, that's been operating in Connecticut, and remarkably, they said that this past tropical storm was greater than Superstorm Sandy. They were saying that
in terms of outages,
fierce winds with the storm caused widespread power outages, historic damage affecting customers in all of the 149 communities that they serve in Connecticut. And, you know, they were going through a list of, you know, Beacon Falls, Naugatuck, Oxford, Seymour, almost all those towns, Oxford, 80%. Out of power. This was as of late yesterday. Seymour, 43%. Quite remarkable. A couple of things are also being canceled, some events that are being held. So I did get contacted by the Fairfield Museum. They've actually started their Jazz Fridays series. They kicked it off last Friday. It's outdoors at the Fairfield Museum. In the town of Fairfield, and Mark Naftalin was scheduled to play a concert. Mark Naftalin, one of our actual WPKN programmers and a member of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, was scheduled to play this Friday at 6:30 until 8, but they have canceled that concert for this Friday. They'll resume again next Friday, but they've had some, you know, pretty big cleanup issues as well. So, you know, we're going to just make sure that because we've been promoting that as a media partner, so we'll get the word out as best we can, and I'm sure there'll be some other cancellations as well.
Yeah, and just to
Richard, I think I need to thank you, and I think I need to get back to my workforce here who
okay.
are in a very hot honey house extracting honey.
Can I prevail on you for one more phone call? Because I see you coming
call.
In.
Excellent.
Let's see if we can get
Thanks, Vincent.
Hello, caller. Are you joining us to talk to Vincent Kay about honey or other matters?
Yes, I am. I had a question for your guest.
he mentioned the dearth. I think I missed the beginning of it. I think he was talking about the lack of nectar before the Joe Pye weed and goldenrod come in. What kind of flowers would you recommend for homeowners to provide nectar for pollinators before the fall flowers come in? Are there any plants that you'd recommend?
Well, there's one, that's a good question, and there's one bee yard, actually two bee yards that we have in Madison, Connecticut, and we have them basically in the middle of a large swamp, and it's just incredible the amount of sweet pepper bush, or clethra is the Latin name, and that that's blooming now, and that has been cultivated and sold in some nurseries, but the smell, the aroma is just like perfume. It's like driving through a orange blossom grove in Florida when the trees are blooming. But it's the honeybees and bumblebees and blue orchard bees. They all love it, and so it sings all over it right now. So that I would recommend. Other things, Joe Pye weed, of course. I mean, these are all kind of invasive things, but, you know, cultivated, they produce a really nice garden of different colors and textures and things like that. And that would certainly be a help. Winter is a coming, and so believe it or not, as far as the bloom goes, the days are going to shorten, the nights will get cooler, and we don't have a whole lot left that needs to bloom or will bloom.
And you mentioned black-eyed Susan did not have a lot of nectar or nutrition for pollinators.
No.
Is that true?
Hello? Did we lose a caller? No, we did not lose a caller. Caller, are you still there? You want to finish your question? Okay. Apparently we did lose the caller. Anyway, Vincent, we want to thank you so much for your time. What was the name of the, you said, was it sweet pepper bush or the one you mentioned in the that smells like an orange grove? Looks like we lost.
Yeah, I remember we lost them both.
We lost our entire.
Well, it's been that way. We had some outages yesterday. I'm glad that people could bear with us. We up at Booth Hill, they were trying to do some reparations with all the Trumbull outages, and I think they had to turn off the electricity to Booth Hill, and so we were on, and we were off again, so we were streaming for a while, but I think we're definitely on again, 89.5 FM, and also streaming, and we've got the generator going, thanks to Mark Mushin.
Looks like maybe Vincent is calling back. Let's see.
Coming back.
Let's see.
This is WPKN, by the way, 89.5 FM. And it's the Organic Farm Stand with Richard Hill.
Today. Hello. Is that Vincent or our other caller? Yeah, there's definitely a...
A little bit of a glitch.
Yeah, okay. All right, let's... let's hope for another call before. But actually, we're approaching the end of the show. We are going to end at 12:55 with some announcements. And
interesting topics, I have to say. This is it's such an intriguing show. I'm usually always around at this time when you're doing your show, and it's just it's a great lineup, and you dig deep into lots of. Smaller, farmers and specialists and bees and other types of gardening issues. So it's really hit its stride, I think.
Let me just
we got a call now.
Hello, caller, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Oh, okay. Sadly, we have lost our master of honey and bees, Vincent Kay. Got dropped off our system, but
I'm certainly of no help.
Yeah, we're gonna welcome your call and ask you what your question is, but we may not be able to answer it.
Okay, my question is: are those Asiatic hornets in Connecticut? Because I'm almost certain I spotted them in Stratford, Connecticut. I'm trying to get pictures of them.
Ah, what do they look like?
I looked up the picture. They're a dead ringer for the picture. A large yellow head, an orange and black, very large abdomen, and a very large stinger. And they're big. They're the size of a small hummingbird. I mean, I got out of my truck to my job, and I jumped back into my truck.
What do you know about them?
Trees. I know they're supposed to like freshly cut trees or sap or something.
Ah, interesting. And are they aggressive and hostile, shall we say?
Aggressive enough where I wouldn't get out to do my job.
Have you heard of the effect of their sting?
I've heard it. I'm allergic to bees also, so I was extremely careful.
I see. Okay. So are they more, toxic or harmful or threatening to humans than normal hornets or wasps?
They're much more toxic, but they're not supposedly that aggressive, but they destroy honeybees.
Yeah, I think I've heard that those are the strain of bees that go in and destroy the hives, right? And they kill all the bees in the hives. They're very, in just kind of a, like maniacal fashion, the way they actually kill the bees is pretty. Yeah.
If I got pictures or a sample, I was thinking would you kind of identify it? Or?
Yeah, well, like I said, Vincent Kay, our beekeeper who joins us for this first Thursday show, is no longer on the line. But is there a way?
Does he have a website?
He does not, actually.
Oh, okay.
Vincent is very old school.
Okay.
But is there a place you could send here and I could forward it to Vincent?
Yeah, possibly, yeah. I mean, you could just, if you want to send it to gm@wpken.org, just put in the subject line, just put in Asian bee, ?
Okay, yeah, I checked out every other type of, like, there's cicada hornets, which are large, and they weren't anything like any of these.
Yeah, I'm stunned when you mention that they're as big as hummingbirds.
Something that happened, I remember reading a story in the Times, New York Times, I think, about the West Coast. It was in the Pacific Northwest that they had discovered that there was a few of them. And they had somebody that was actually writing the story that was an expert on bees and had, like, almost like literally like Kevlar a suit that was penetrated by the stinger, which is pretty intense.
Yeah.
Well, thanks,
for
Richard.
Yep, we got to roll on. And
who's up next?
Go to some announcements.
Peter Beauchamp, I think. Yeah,
Peter Beauchamp's all mixed up. Coming up. My name is Richard Hill. This has been the Organic Farm Stand. Thanks for all the calls, and come back 2 weeks from today, and we will be back here with more Organic Farm Stand.
This is the Gaiagram, environmental headlines from around a planet in crisis.
Researchers have for the first time discovered an active leak of methane gas from under Antarctica's sea floor. Methane is a powerful greenhouse gas that warms the planet much more than carbon dioxide does. Its release, when ice melts further, speeds up global heating. The researchers also found microorganisms that can consume methane before it is released to the atmosphere took about 5 years to appear and still let methane gas escape when they arrived. The lead researcher said the findings are not good news, but said the discoveries will help the group understand how methane is released in Antarctica and its effects on the planet's temperature. According to a study in the Nature Journal of Climate and Atmospheric Science, Alaska has been experiencing some very rainy summers compared with records going back a century. Scientists warn that the winters have lost almost 3 weeks a year to summer. The precipitation augurs ill for the permafrost underlying about 85% of the state. Measurements over 5 years show that the wetter the summer, the more permafrost thawed. Melting permafrost releases carbon dioxide and methane. It also spells trouble for buildings and roads erected on it. Moreover, a warmer Alaska may be greener, creating fuel for wildfires of the type afflicting Siberia this year. New first-of-its-kind research from the University of Colorado Boulder shows that climate change is driving increasing amounts of fresh water into the Arctic Ocean. Within the next few decades, this will lead to increased fresh water moving into the North Atlantic Ocean, which could disrupt ocean currents and affect temperatures in northern Europe. The authors said, we hear a lot about changes in the Arctic with respect to temperature and how ecosystems and animals are going to be affected, but this particular study gives an added perspective on what's happening physically to the ocean itself, which then can have important implications for ocean circulation and climate. France is to outlaw trapping birds using sticks covered in glue after the European Commission threatened legal action and fines. The move was welcomed by campaigners who have described the practice as barbaric and who urged the French government not to bow to pressure from the powerful hunting lobby. Hunters argue the method of trapping birds known as chasse à la glu is a centuries-old rural tradition and say they are being persecuted. The commission estimates 40,000 birds are caught using glue sticks by 5,000 hunters every year. The British firm Diageo is to roll out 100% plastic-free bottles of Johnnie Walker starting next year. This is the latest example of a major drinks manufacturer attempting to move toward more sustainable forms of packaging. The firm said the bottle would be paper-based and made entirely from sustainably sourced wood pulp to meet food-safe standards and will be fully recyclable in standard waste streams. In addition to bottles for Diageo, the bottle maker Pulpex has set up a partner consortium of fast-moving consumer goods businesses, including PepsiCo and Unilever, who are also set to release their own products using the paper bottle technology next year. A ranking of the organizations doing the most to embrace sustainable business practices was announced at the World Economic Forum annual meeting in Davos, Switzerland. The Global 100 list ranks corporations with revenue in excess of $1 billion based on key metrics of sustainability, among them carbon footprint and gender diversity. Topping this year's list is Denmark-based renewable energy provider Ørsted. The first electricity company to earn the distinction of number one climbed 69 spots since 2018, in part due to the way in which it has reinvented its business model over the past decade, converting to sustainable wind power. The company makes environmental sustainability a priority. The Ørsted CEO said, "We believe it's quite urgent that we respond to the climate emergency, and it has been the driving ambition of our company to contribute to a world that is run entirely on green energy."